You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie, and joining me now, as promised, Trevor Lardon from the United States, writer, political commentator. His latest book, Stealth, Kamala Harris and Her Communist Roots, is now out. I was just telling Trevor just before we got started, I've started it on Audible. Really good, Trevor. I'm really enjoying it. How are you? Happy?
I'm doing great. Yeah, well, my feet really haven't touched the ground yet. It's great. There's a whole different mood here now. It's great. You know, we're all happy.
There was the talk, make it too big to rig. But I mean, this was a win that wasn't just a win full stop. It was a win, exclamation point, fist bump. And because of that, the unrest that was bubbling under the surface really hasn't manifested, has it?
No, look, it is coming. They are getting organised. But look, the left was stunned. I was predicting there'd be riots the day after the election, and they were getting ready for it. But I think they thought either Kamala would just win or Trump would just win, and there'd be contested seats and there'd be lawsuits and whatever, and they could flame that up. But it was just so commanding that they're stunned. They're just, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. So they are starting to, you know, get organized. There was a big illegal immigrants rally in New York a few days ago, you know, several thousand illegal immigrants, meaning several thousand communists with six illegal immigrants. You know, that's what it was. So they're getting ready to do that, and especially when the deportations start, that's when we'll start to see a lot of unrest, I think. But yeah, it was, you know, when you win the Electoral College and the popular vote and the House and the Senate and the White House, it was pretty darn impressive. And the left just was not expecting that. They believe their own propaganda too much.
Well, and I think there was a lot of talk of the red wave. I remember when we first started chatting was back at midterms, and there was a lot of talk of the red wave at midterms, and it didn't really eventuate.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a red tsunami this time around. So in a way, I think it softened them up, thinking, oh, they're talking themselves up. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, this is right. They believed that, I read a lot of their stuff, and they were believing they would quite possibly lose, but by very, very slim margins, or win by a little bit. That's what they expected. And so they believed their own stuff. But, you know, Trump blitzed the Jewish vote, got a big chunk of the black vote, especially black men, got the plurality, the majority of Hispanic men, which is pretty much unheard of. So the left is, and I talk a lot about the Rainbow Coalition strategy, you know, from Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition strategy of the 80s. You win majorities for the Democrats by getting the white progressives, the brown progressives, black progressives, yellow progressives. And this is their terminology, not mine. And that was their way. That was what Obama won on. That was how they were going to take over America and get a permanent governing majority. And Trump's blowing that out of the water. Because he appeals to the minority voters and talks their language, he's crumbling this whole Maoist strategy that's been there for 60 years. It's just crumbling now, and they don't know what to do.
No. So the 20 million votes, Democratic votes, that were in the system last time for Joe Biden they've miraculously disappeared, Trev. Did they stay home?
Yeah, look something else? 20, look, the enthusiasm for Biden was so great in 2020,16 million more voters came out for Biden than came out for Obama, and then they stayed home. 16 million of them stayed home for Kamala Harris. You know, that graph is just so brilliant. And what you're talking about, I think in 2016, the Democrats got 66 million votes. In 2012, they got 63 million. In 2020, they got 82 million. And now they're back to 66 million. 66, 66, 66, 82. You know, where did they come from? Where did they go? You know, look, it is so patently obvious where they came from. and the fact that they didn't have the mail-in ballots, they didn't have the COVID, and a lot of states have been a lot tougher on election fraud, meant that they couldn't cheat like they used to. And so we got a fairer election. There was still a lot of cheating, I'm absolutely sure. I'm sure it cost us 3 or 4 Senate seats and several House seats. But it was, as Trump said, it was too big to rig. You know, Pennsylvania was a great victory. Like, you know, got the Senate seat. Well, it's still up for a possible recount. Got 2 congressional seats and won the state, the most critical state. So, you know, I was up in Pennsylvania twice before the election, and they were quietly confident up there, and they had the Amish out voting.
If the Amish are coming out, it's serious.
Well, this is the Democrats overplaying here. When they started coming after the Amish and shutting them down for selling raw milk and whatever they were doing, they were so stupid. They kicked the beehive they didn't have to kick, and they came out to vote, and that was a big contributing factor to the victory.
And you said to me a conversation or two ago that one of the most concerning areas in terms of voter apathy was the Christian vote that doesn't turn out.
Yeah.
Well, they turned out, and I think they saw
a significant number did. There's still a lot that didn't, but enough. And I was very gratified by that, because there's still a lot of pastors out there who are actively telling their people not to vote. It's ungodly to be involved in the civic governance of your nation. And that has increased. Trump actually got 3 million votes less this time than he got last time. So we got to keep that in mind. He got a little bit less, but the Democrats got a ton less, meaning the Democrats went back to their normal level, basically.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that I find quite interesting. I actually think, in hindsight, because I mean, let's face it, hindsight is always 20/20. But if you actually look at the fact that Joe Biden got elected in inverted commas last time, it's probably a good thing, because it was something you said on Breakfast with Paul just before the election, the day before the election. And it's something that I hadn't truly genuinely considered, is that because in 2016, it snuck up on him, it surprised Trump a little bit that he was going to win. He didn't have the transition team, the dream team around him, so therefore he had to kind of make do with what was there. If he'd gone through with a consecutive term, he would have had a lot of that dead wood around. Whereas this time around, you have had 4 years of absolute Marxist lunacy that everyone has been able to see. Trump himself is vastly more prepared, has a tremendous team around him. I actually think, in a way, that's been a blessing, not a curse.
Yeah, look, I agree. And you know, you also had the fact that, you know, and to go along with that, you know, you had all these people got out there, voted for Trump. It was sort of a surprise victory. And a lot of people said, hallelujah, the man's in charge, we can all go to sleep now. And they didn't fully understand the depth of the revolution we're up against. So Trump gets the election stolen, and we get our noses rubbed in it like little puppies for 4 years. People, through the COVID, through the Black Lives Matter, through the election steals and the absolute Marxism that we've had to endure for 4 years, the rising prices, the suppression of speech and everything else that's gone with it, millions of Americans finally woke up to the fact that they could lose their country, that we're on the verge of losing the country. And they came to the polls in big numbers, and Trump was prepared much better this time. So, yes, in a way, I think it was a blessing that election was stolen, because it woke people up that otherwise wouldn't have been woken up. But it was hard. it was a hard 4 years, I've got to tell you. And it ain't over. You know, we got lots to deal with here, and we're going to get a lot of pushback, and who knows what could happen. But the feeling of hope and optimism is through the roof here right now. It's really changed in a day. Like my daughter in New Zealand said, she was watching the election. She had a little Trump shirt on. She had a little election party in New Zealand. She said at the end of it, Dad, she said, Dad, I feel safe again, you know? And that's, it's not just America, it's all over the world.
Well, I mean, as you know, I work in the culture war space. So for me, this has been tremendously encouraging. We were the same. We had a little election party here. And one of the things that I loved is my sons had a number of their friends over. Yeah. So, you know, half the people that were there were these teenagers aged between 16 and 18 who were highly engaged in this process. For me, regardless of who they're supporting, the fact that they're engaged, that gives me hope.
That's exactly right. And I saw your son's election poster, you know, when he was running for the school captain or whatever it was in his West High School, you know, with his fist pump in the air and his couple of mates holding him down. And, you know, this is a historic event, you know, that's been felt around the world. You know, you see little things of kids in Uganda, you know, playing that thing out. And kids of 16, 18, they sense there was doom on the horizon, and they were getting engaged here. And I saw this all around the country, all around the world, you know, young people. So this is my future here. This is very important to my future. What's going to happen here is going to make the difference in how I live. And so, yeah, we got that.
So then let's cast our eye across to some of the appointments and some of the positions that are now starting to be filled. Now, Senate leader was one that in the media people were quite like thought Rick Scott from Florida would get the nod. He was somebody who has worked very closely with Trump. But it was John Thune from South Dakota that got across the line. And some were concerned about that. I'm not particularly worried. I mean, I looked at Thune. South Dakota is a very libertarian-based stance. They were one a state that they were like the Sweden of the United States when it came to COVID. Yeah. So, you know, they've got a great mindset there. I would have thought that after Mitch McConnell, anything is going to be a dramatic improvement.
Look, I think so too. Look, Thune was a protege of McConnell to a degree. So I probably would have preferred Rick Scott, but he was unlikely to get it. Not likely. I'm glad. I prefer Thune to John Cornyn from Texas, actually. So, yeah, I would have preferred Scott, but I'm not heartbroken. You know, I think Trump's going to set the agenda here. Thune has already agreed to do Trump's recess appointments if necessary. So I don't anticipate a lot of backlash from the Senate. I think the Senate is going to go along with the agenda pretty well. They might push back on some things, as perhaps they should, but overall I'm not greatly upset about that.
No. So let's go down the list at some of the others. Let's start off with the two probably most controversial ones. Matt Gaetz, Attorney General. I think I have to admit I was surprised.
I was shocked, yeah.
Yeah, for listeners that aren't aware, Matt Gaetz has had a fair amount of mud flung in his direction over the last 4 years.
Yeah. And I'm glad he's not being a diplomat. Not a diplomatic guy, but yeah, he's a very feisty, very hardcore guy. He was one of the main leaders of the rebellion against McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House. So he's always been pretty out there, pretty controversial, absolutely.
Will there be issues around his confirmation with those rumours that were swirling around 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, I think there will be. See, this is the thing, and this is a positive and a negative, and I think I know who you're going to talk about next. But anyway, I like Matt Gaetz in that I think he'd be very, very strong and be very aggressive in dealing with the Justice Department and sorting things out. I think he'd have a lot of trouble getting through the Senate, but I think this is why Trump is going to try and put him through in a recess appointment, which is where you can, at a certain time, if you align the stars right, you can actually get people appointed without going through the Senate confirmation process. And Trump laid the groundwork. He said that all of the three who are running for Senate, that's a Senate decision when they go into recess. So if they're in recess, you can bypass them. And so they can determine when they go into recess. And so that's why he said to Thune and to Cornyn and Rick Scott, you got to be willing to do recess appointments. And they all said yes. So I think that's how he's going to get Matt Gaetz through if he does. I think that's how he'll do it. And it's certainly making heads explode. You know, I got my issues with Matt Gaetz. But I think he would be pretty damn dynamic, and he'd be pretty hardcore against some of the ratbags in the Justice Department for sure.
He's not afraid of creating offence, Trevor. In fact,
certainly not. And I'm just glad he's not diplomat to the Court of St. James or whatever, you know, not our representative to the Court of St. James, because we'd be in World War III with Britain before you knew it. But I think in that role, he'll be probably, I can see a lot of merit in that.
Right. Okay. Marco Rubio. You knew I was going to go there next.
Yeah. Marco, yeah. Look, I'm actually quite pleased with that. You know, look, people accuse me of being a neocon and that sort of thing. I'm more of a Reagan conservative. I believe in standing up to the bad guys of the world, calling out Iran, calling out Russia when necessary, calling out China when necessary. And Marco Rubio, with his Cuban background, is very good along those lines. And I think he's an appointment that will give a lot of confidence to America's allies, who were thinking that Trump might be a bit iffy on certain foreign policy issues. So I'm okay with that. And he was not my favorite because, you know, he ran during the Tea Party wave back in 2012, and he ran on an anti-illegal immigrant platform, and then he went straight in and tried to negotiate a deal with to amnesty illegal immigrants, which burned off a lot of his Tea Party base. So I don't want him anywhere near immigration, but on foreign policy, I've always been pretty okay with his stance. So I'm good with that.
I've been tracking, and by the time that this airs, I've been tracking if he is confirmed, the seat that he leaves, they then have to, because they don't take it to, they do an appointment, don't they?
Yeah,
they don't
the governor, Ron DeSantis, will get to appoint his successor.
Yeah, as someone that I've interviewed here on the show a couple of times, I think is one of the names being thrown in the ring for that appointment. So that's young James Fishback, who's from Incubate Debate, but he also does a bit of work alongside Vivek Ramaswamy in the business space. Very, very sharp, dynamic young Republican. So I will be watching this space very, very closely to see.
Yeah, there's been a few names floated. I hadn't heard that one in the mix, but it'll be interesting. Ron's not going to appoint some rhino liberal. You can be assured of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's somebody who can carry on the agenda and win next time, because they'll have to face an election, I think, in 2026, I believe it is. Yeah,
exactly. So they need to be strong. They need to get their boots on the ground and prove their worth.
And Ron doesn't appoint wimps. He appoints pretty tough guys and girls. So
since we mentioned Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk as a little dream team for the Department of Government Efficiency. Now, Elizabeth Warren took a wee swipe at them, saying, oh, look at that, how efficient. They've been pointing to two people, of which Elon spat back, yes, but neither of us are being paid, so we've already saved 100% on salaries. For me, that is the Malay-esque combination in terms of carving up the sort of bureaucratic blob.
I cannot wait. They're going to make Milei in Argentina look like a wimp. You know, they're going to embarrass him. He's only got a chainsaw. You know, he's only got a chainsaw to cut through government departments. I think they will not hold back at all. And I hope they start on the Department of Education first, but go through the whole lot. I think that's one of the most exciting things. And again, you know, I don't agree with Elon on everything. I don't agree with Vivek on everything. But they are both very much small government, just get the government out of people's faces type of guys. They've both been in business at a high level. They've both come up against stupid government regulations. And they both understand the power of the market, the power of freedom, the power of liberty to create wealth and create freedom and prosperity for people. So if I was a government bureaucrat right now, I'd be thinking of taking early retirement and see if I get a job in McDonald's before they get swamped.
Yeah. Now, one of the names that I didn't know was Thomas Homan. He's the new border czar. Tell me about him.
Oh, yeah. That's my favourite, really. Tom Homan he's going to be the immigration czar. Not head of ICE, but he's going to be answering directly to Trump. And Trump ran on a mass program of deporting illegal immigrants. Homan is a former border agent, former ICE guy, been a friend of Trump's for a long time. He's been on the conservative circuit for a long time. I've been to several conferences where he's spoken, and he is the hardest of the hardcore. You know, he's a humorous guy. He's got tons of personality. But the famous interview that the other day, one with some liberal hand wringer said to him, "Oh, but if you deport people, you have to separate families." And he said, "Oh, no, not necessarily. You know, you can deport them all together." You know, he does not apologize. He does not buy into this left-wing garbage at all. He is totally MAGA, totally pro-American. You know, if you come here legally, you're welcome. If you're not, you're going home. That's his attitude. He'll start with the criminals, the MS-13s, the gangs, the Trinidad Aguera, all those people, the cartel guys. He'll start with them, but he won't finish there. This is going to be a massive deportation. Somebody said to him the other day, he said, "Oh, well, it's going to cost $20 billion to deport a million people, blah, blah, blah." You know, and he says, "Well, I don't know if those figures are accurate, but so what? You know, what price do you put on national security?" You know, how many people have died? How much disease have we got in this country? The voting patterns that have changed, the elections that are stolen, the massive drain on local communities who have to fund illegal immigrant kids and put them in hospital and for free and all this kind of thing. You know, 40% of the illegal immigrants coming across the border are not even literate in their own native language. 40%. Yeah. This is a great boon to America, right? This is the Democrats' plan for making this a one-party state. Import 30, 40 million illegals, give them voting rights and turn them all into Democrats. That's their plan. And they will still succeed in that if there is not a mass deportation. Eisenhower deported, I think, the 3.5 million illegals in a couple of years back in the 1940s. Wasn't hard to do. You just cut off the welfare, you cut off the jobs, you implement E-Verify, you find employers who are caught employing them, and most of them will self-deport. Most of them will just go. And then you have to round up the criminals and round up the rest. And yeah, it's a big issue, but it isn't insurmountable. And Tom Homan is the perfect man for the job. Very well known in the conservative base here. Very popular. I haven't heard one dissenting voice from conservatives about appointing Tom Homan. And I think he will fly through Senate confirmation.
So then the next one on that list is, of course, Kristi Noem for Homeland Security, that then picks up a lot of those agencies that will be needed to be used for sort of the deportations. I mean, this is definitely a reward, I think, for her standing out from the crowd during those four years.
Yeah, she has in many ways, yeah. But it was still a head scratcher for me because it's not something she has a background in. But I'm sure she'll do it well. But she didn't appear on my radar for the job, put it that way.
Yeah, but I was slightly surprised around that, but she's capable, so I guess that's what she's proven.
Yeah, she's capable, and she's made one or two bad decisions as governor of South Dakota, but she was very good through the COVID, very strong on defending states' rights and that kind of thing. So, you know, so sovereignty is obviously an issue for her. So yeah, I think she'll do fine, you know, but again, a surprise.
Let's jump into sort of the more defensive area. The one that really made me happy was Tulsi Gabbard and National Intelligence. I was thrilled with that.
That was the one that made me completely unhappy. So
really? So why do you know? So what? Who do you think would have been better?
My dog. You know,
really?
Seriously, I am not a Tulsi Gabbard fan at any stretch of the imagination. I've written books about her. And she's married to a Kiwi, so you'd think she'd be all right, but no.
That's probably the only decision you like, is it, Trev?
Look, she, of all the people chosen, she was the only one I'm vehemently against. A couple of them been iffy, but no, not her. Look, she has never met an enemy of America she didn't like. She's worked with North Korean agents, with Venezuelan agents, with Russian agents, with Syrian agents. She's a protege of Denis Kucinich, who is a hardcore communist, and is also very close to Jackson Hinkle, who is a MAGA communist, who she works with to this day. She has worked with communists her entire political career up until a year ago. While she was going to CPAC and getting cheers, she'd go to a communist rally the next day. I saw her speak at the People's Summit in Chicago in 2017. That was 3,000 communists. Democratic Socialist America, Workers World Party, Communist Party USA, hardcore communists. And she was their keynote speaker, and she wowed them. And basically, her job is basically to sell Russian foreign policy to conservatives. That's what her job is. And, you know, I'm going to be starting to tweet about her begging Trump to reconsider on this one, you know, from day one. The only one of all his appointees I'm vehemently opposed to. But you tell me why you like her, Murray. You tell me.
Well, see, I look at it from I come from the culture war space, and she was somebody who was prepared to stand up and walk across the floor and co-author a bill around gender, protecting women and women's sports, basically. So for me, that was
good.
And showed Kirstie, some strength.
Kirstie Noem vetoed a bill like that in South Dakota, which put a lot of conservatives off. And she had reasons for it. Look, yes, she does that. Look, her thing is this. She's the MAGA communist. This is Jackson Hinkle and Caleb Maupin and Hazal Din. These are pro-Russia, pro-China, pro-North Korea communists who are trying to infiltrate the Trump movement. And they're doing it by saying, we're anti-woke. Okay, we're anti-woke. Because what this is the wokeness is Marxism, right? Wokeness comes from Maoism. It's a sort of feminized brand of communism. It's sort of iffy, airy-fairy, you know, love everybody. You accept every aberration you possibly can, you know, and it appalls a lot of people. A lot of people don't like it. You know, no Americans like Marxism. And so the MAGA communists, they are more like old-fashioned Stalinists. We put the workers first. We are macho, hardcore, revolutionary communists, and she is in their camp. So she is just like Putin pushes the anti-woke thing. It was the Soviets and the Chinese that gave us wokeism, and now Putin stands there saying, we hate the wokeism of the West. We are Christian. We're conservative. We protect conservative values, while he's pushing a million Muslims into Germany, while he's working to put bombs in Latin America, while he's working with the cartels, while he's working with the Venezuelans and the Nicaraguans, you know, and the Cubans against America. Tulsi Gabbard is in that camp. She is an anti-woke Marxist. That's what she
right,
is.
Right. Well, we'll have to keep an eyeball on her then.
Look, Jackson Hinkle is the leader of the American Communist Party, the newly formed American Communist Party, and he endorsed Tulsi Gabbard just a few weeks ago for Trump's cabinet. She goes surfing with the guy. She interviews their close friends. He is a leader of the American Communist Party and an anti-woke communist, and she is right in his camp, right 100% in his camp. So I am appalled by this, and I'm going to be doing whatever I can to try and get this derailed if I can. And I'm at odds with a lot of my Republican friends because they all think she's the best thing since sliced bread. But I did a book, you know, White House Red, a while back. All the communists running in 2020, you know, Tom Steyer, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Tulsi Gabbard, Joe Biden, Little Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, you know, Deval Patrick, Julian Castro. She was right smack in the center back then. She was a Bernie bro. She was completely in the Bernie camp. But she was the head of the Ohio Communist Party. I've got a quote from the head of the Ohio Communist Party, best friends of her protege, Denis Kucinich. Tulsi Gabbard will make a great anti, when she was running for president, a great anti-imperialist president. She will bring down the military. She will bring forth a progressive future. This is the head of the Ohio Communist Party saying this, you know, who is the best friend of her protege. So, yeah, watch the space. I hope you're right and I hope I'm wrong. 100%. I'll be happy to be humbled on this one.
No, look, but this is the nice thing. This is the good thing about these discussions. We can pop a wee asterisk next to Tulsi and keep a wee eye out. The other one just that I want to round off in this group before I get off to, because I do want to talk about RFK Jr., is Pete Heathcote for defence.
Yeah. I think he's great. I think that was a great decision and it's setting. Look, the US military is led by woke generals. You know, Milley and all of those people, they are woke as woke can be. Because when Obama was in office, he fired the old guard. He got rid of about 200 generals, admirals, etc., and replaced them with Princeton sociology graduates. So the US military is full of DEI and wokeism. The military effectiveness is way down. Look, Pete Hegseth has come out and said very bravely, and I fully agree, women should not be in combat. The wokeness should be gone from the military. And, this is terrible. He's more worried about wokeness than he is about Russia or China. No, he's not. He just understands that the current US military can't effectively defend the country because they have undermined their effectiveness, just like every major American corporation has undermined the bottom line by accepting this DEI, ESG, you know, all this whatever it is. You know, ESG, all this garbage. And he's going to go through that and he's going to clean that out. I was very, very pleased with that appointment. Because he's a lower level guy. He hasn't been poisoned by the system. He's served in combat. He's been very, very vocal. He's written a book about wokeness in the military. So he knows the prime problem in the US military is not lack of, you know, training. It's the wokeness and the woke leadership. That's not lack of nuclear weapons or whatever. It is the pathetic woke leadership. And he's going to fix that. And I can't wait for him to start. Can't wait.
Yeah. And every warm-blooded American woman will be absolutely thrilled with his appointment because he's exceptionally easy on the eye, Trevor, as an observation.
Yeah, not that I've noticed, but yeah. And he's got all these tats up his arm too. Did you notice that?
I didn't know that. Yeah, there you go. So, right.
But yes, he could be on the pages, front part cover of Gentleman's Quarterly or something quite easily. So it's not going to hurt.
No, definitely not. Right, RFK Jr. What have you heard in terms of that? Because there's been no official appointment, but Trump has made it very clear that he wants him to have an effective role. I see Dr. Asim Malhotra has received a little shoulder tap in terms of advice within that health framework. So what have you heard on the ground around what's already started to happen in that space and how big and bold do you think he'll go?
I think we'll definitely see. I think he'll be like Tom Homan. He'll get a czar position. I don't think he'll be head of health and human services or anything like that. So I think he'll be a czar. Like he's already said on day one, we're going to take the fluoride out of the water nationwide. Now, I don't know if he can actually do that because it's a local decision, but he can certainly withhold federal grants from local bodies who continue to poison the water of people, including my district here in Free Florida. Yeah, so I think RFK is one of those guys. Like, he's the guy who said a few years ago he would like to execute climate deniers. You know, he's still got a lot of left-wing baggage, but when it comes to health, nutrition, poisoning of our food supply and that, he is great, and I can't wait to see him let loose in those areas. I wouldn't like to see him in charge of foreign policy or anything like that. But as long as he is given a mandate to clean up American agriculture, to clean up the overregulation of the medical sector, the corruption of the medical sector, and actually go after some of the people who basically betrayed this country and inflicted massive harm on this country, I'm all about it. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be great.
So who do you think if will get the HHS nod?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been looking all around and nobody immediately springs to mind. Who I'd like it to be would be the guy who's currently running health policy in Florida.
Labrador.
Yeah, Labrador, yeah. Oh, well, that's who I would like it to be, someone like that.
Yeah, Joseph Labrador, I think his name is.
Yeah, I would like to. He was very strong against vaccines. He's been very good in Florida. You know, he set up all these clinics all over Florida for the injections he gave us.
A monoclonal antibodies?
Yeah, he set up all that. I'd like to see him in a national role. Not that I want to lose him from Florida, but I would like to see him in a national role, whether it's head of that or maybe even head of the CDC or something like that. Who knows?
I wondered about Pierre Corey because
I don't know enough about him. About him.
Because he's got quite a bit of piss and vinegar, and I think it needs to be somebody that's got a certain amount of, I mean, he's run sort of departments, but he's not run anything on a governmental level, but he has got enough strop, I think, because you're going to have a fairly thick hide for that role, I would have thought.
I would also love to see Peter McCullough in a role somewhere.
Yeah.
I really would. You know, at what level, I'm not sure what role, but I would like to see him. He's a man of proven courage and proven integrity, and has stood up like nobody else has. So, yeah, and a guy who had a lot to lose by doing so. So, yeah, I would love to see him somewhere in the mix.
Mm. Now, before we head off, one last question. The rumours that Biden and Jill voted for Trump. Rumour, speculation, or truth, Trev?
I think that's rumour, and I'd be very surprised. I don't think Joe Biden probably even voted. Probably didn't realize the election was on. I don't know, but I don't know. I think Joe, by endorsing Kamala Harris, when Kamala was like, I've written about it in my book, she was always supposed to be the one, but I think they'd soured on her because she was so pathetic as VP, and I think they really wanted Gretchen Whitmer or someone else, you know, to carry things forward. And I think Joe's final act of defiance was to give the finger to Obama by endorsing Kamala Harris and taking the decision out. So I don't think Joe would have voted for them. I don't think Jill would have either, but I think Joe would have had a little bit of a gloat when he saw the damage he'd done and the revenge he'd got. He's not really an ideological guy. He just does it for what's in it for Joe. And I'm sure he's got a very good severance package from the Democratic Party, and he'll be okay for the rest of his sad, sad lifetime.
Mm. Well, there's still plenty more fun and games to be had, certainly across the summer period down here at least.
This is just getting started. So it's going to be very exciting, Marie. And I'm sure I won't agree with all of it, but I'm sure I will agree with most of it. And, I just can't wait. And I think this is going to have impact all around the world, you know. With the things that Trump's doing and the bold stand he's going to take, I think this is going to empower populist forces and grassroots forces all around the world, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Brazil, everywhere. I think it's going to be great. Great.
Well, I think it's that unspoken permission for a little bit of bravery and courage now. In the media show I do with my friend, we were looking at just some things that were in articles that appeared in the weekend papers from more conservative, one in particular. But there were statements that were made, both made and printed, that I am sure would not have been done prior to the election.
Look, 100%. I noticed even Chris Trotter wrote quite a complimentary article the other day, you know, I wouldn't say maybe not complimentary, but acknowledging the changes that Trump has brought, you know, and he's an old lefty, but he's realistic. And I think this will give permission all around the world for people to set a new bar, to set a new standard, because for years we've just thought we can only ever elect politicians who betray us. That we can hardly ever win anything, you know. Well, now Now the bar has been set differently, and especially in Trump's second term, when he's learned his lessons, where he's got the house, he's got everything, he's got ready to go, he's got an agenda, and he isn't wasting any time. I think this is one of the most, probably the most exciting political time of my lifetime. Mm. I think all of us, and they'll be writing books about this for 1,000 years. This period,
Oh, they certainly will. Well, thank you so much, as always, Trevor. Trevor Larden from Florida, of course. He's got several books like that one. What was the one from 2020? Hold that one back up again.
White House Reds.
White House Reds, and then of course the latest one, which I've started, Stealth Kamala Harris's Communist
Roots. Just behind me up there, Stealth Kamala Harris's Communist Roots.
There
I've
you
sold
go.
Quite a few copies in New Zealand, I've got to say, and Australia. I was quite surprised.
I told them to buy it, Trevor, so I'm not surprised at all.
Well, tell them I got a new one coming out on Anthony Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, very soon. So you tell them to buy that one too.
Okay, I will, Trevor. And, of course, you and I think we'll catch up again after the inauguration and we can see how things are tracking.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot of things. Yeah, well, I think we'll start to see the pushback, the violence a little bit by then, but we'll certainly see how things are shaping up. And I think we'll start to see people seeping back across the border pretty darn soon. We'll start to see people I think we're going to see a lot of resignations from academic posts, from media, from big tech, from government. I think we're going to start, a lot of people are going to get out before they're pushed.
Mm. Oh, look, this has been awesome. Excellent. Thank you, Trevor. Trevor Larden here with Counterculture on Reality Check Radio. And we'll catch up again in the new year. Thanks, Trev.
You're most welcome. Great to see you, Marie, and thanks to all the New Zealanders watching.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.